And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
This is Different Roads, Same Castle. It is a discussion of politics between a Republican, a Democrat, and an Independent who all happen to be in the same family. Two brothers and a father trying to make sense of the news, each from their own perspective. While news programs bring on those with opposing views for the sake of argument, we come together as a family. We'll look for agreement when possible, and disagree when our conscience deems it necessary. Maybe by no longer vilifying the opposition, but listening, really listening, to the needs, hopes, and fears of those with whom we don't automatically agree, we will find a road forward. It may not be the same road, but sometimes different roads lead to the same castle.
Read my lips. No new taxes.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan, period.
Fool me once, shame on you. If you fool me, you can't get fooled again.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Looking back, it would have been better if I simply used a second email account.
This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it.
Welcome to episode 2, entitled Morning in America, where we will explore the aftermath of the recent U.S. presidential election, including the actions of our current and future president.
Welcome back, gentlemen. Here we are in the aftermath of whatever you think of the result was certainly one of the most contentious and bizarre elections we've ever had. From the candidates themselves and their record low approval ratings on both sides and the animosity that they aroused in their followers and those who oppose them, to the actions of the FBI, to possible involvement of foreign governments, insinuations of voter fraud, possible post-election prosecutions of either or both major party candidates. All that said, it was intense and it seemed to drag on interminably. I don't know why our elections seem to last about 20 years. And then the moment it's over, we start talking about the next one. But we're not gonna attempt to rehash any of the issues of the election. We're not looking at why one group lost and another won in an election that's essentially over. So no conversations about, well, Bernie could have won because he really essentially had less votes regardless of the special electors he discussed. No more about the FBI. We're just going to look at the things that have happened since the election. Okay?
So okay.
I want to start us off a quote from Teddy Roosevelt. A vote is like a rifle. Its usefulness depends upon the character of the user. So on that note, we have about 40 days left until the inauguration. So let's look back at the election night and the days that immediately followed, which includes Trump's acceptance speech, Hillary's concession, and Obama's reaction. What are your guys' thoughts on those? Justin, you want to go?
I think you guys know I was definitely not completely surprised, but upset. Upset by the result.
This is not the outcome we wanted or we worked so hard for. And I'm sorry that we did not win this election.
America is crying tonight. I'm not sure how much of America, but a very, very significant portion, and I mean literally crying.
They come up to me and they're scared, depressed, despair, desperate even, almost clinging to me.
Fear, not for myself by any means, but fear when I saw, you know, that fear for my children and...
Why exactly?
So... It was weird. It was like I had an uncontrollable emotion come over me, and I was just in anger and tears and just fear of discrimination that I've experienced prior to election. Just that now it's the fear that it's going to be okay and more comfortable. Not because I feel like that. Not that more people became racist, but we know who they are more or less. It's more comfortable to be, you know, discriminatory again.
So that somehow Trump's victory made discrimination more acceptable?
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, not that his victory, but that fact that along the path that he had a lot of, like, the things that he was saying, we don't
have
to react.
Some of his supporters might have taken it that way.
more than just some. I mean, when we're having rallies from KKK celebrating parades to, I'm going to call them white supremacists and not the alt-right, having celebration parties in D.C. and other places in this country over a presidential candidate.
Hail Trump! Hail our people!
And then when we're seeing news stories over and over and over and over and over again, mass discrimination even on with people of like the NYPD officer, for example. So I feel my fears are justified. So yeah, my initial, if we're just talking about initial, things are different today than they were initially. But yeah, probably for the next couple of days, my mind went to what am I going to do to keep my family and my children safe?
So, Dad, what were your feelings and reactions in the immediate aftermath of the election?
My feelings were, thank God the whole thing's over. I was sick and tired of the whole election. Boondoggle is the only word I can think of.
I think it's a great word.
This candidacy starting on an escalator ride 1 year ago and going down against 16 Republican candidates. What started off as unlikely, impossible, is now reality.
I figured, you know, we survived the last 8, 12, 16 years. We can survive 4 years of whoever's elected and pray that at least the people I know are all safe. And I thank God for that.
I remember talking to an avid Hillary Clinton supporter, even during the primaries, Hillary Clinton supporter, the day of the election. And I said to him, so if you had the option today of the elections today, if you had the option of finding out that Hillary lost today or of realizing that the election is way too close and it's going to go on for another 2-3 more months because of recounts. And so to your point, yeah, at least it was over.
One other thing I wanted to add, not what my brother did, but a question my brother asked, because he was going or had gone through about that time the death of his wife and planning funeral preparations. The first part of end of October, first part of November. And after the election had happened, we know a black lady that works at the funeral home at the cemetery where mom and dad are buried, grandma and grandpa are buried, Aunt Lori's buried. And Ron asked her, what do you think of the election? And she says, well, I actually voted for Trump. And that, when he told me that, that surprised me. She just felt that she said she felt she couldn't have any confidence in Hillary. So that was why she voted for Trump, which surprised me. So I'll just let it go with that. And you can continue, Sean.
Well, no, there is definitely an uproar. It wasn't just rural white voters that voted for Trump. There's definitely more than that, because that's
evangelicals or anything. Yeah.
For me, in the immediate aftermath, I had a lot of emotional pulls in a number of directions. I had created musical playlists, actually, depending upon the result of the election. But the playlist I had going the day of the election, even though I didn't know who was going to win, it started out with REM's End of the World, as we know it, and I Feel Fine. Just as the general idea of like, yeah, everybody's calling. If Clinton wins, if Trump wins, oh, it's going to be the apocalypse. America is over. But, you know, here we are at the end of the world. And, you know, here I am doing what I need to do. In the immediate aftermath, some people were in abject sorrow and others were ridiculously excited. I found that the tempered reactions of Trump, Clinton, and Obama in the immediate days afterwards to kind of be reassuring, just in the process of American democracy and in humanity in general.
I said to the American people, regardless of which side you were on in the election, regardless of whether your candidate won or lost, the sun would come up in the morning. And that is one bit of prognosticating that actually came true.
There was horrible vitriol spewed throughout the campaign. And then Trump, in his victory speech, spoke very kind words about Hillary Clinton. and even later discussing how he wouldn't plan to prosecute her despite the campaign's clarion calls to lock her up, lock her up. And then Obama, his promise to give Trump every bit of assistance to help him succeed, you know, simply for the good of America. Those things were cautiously encouraging to me, at least, which sort of reminded me of the alternative happening when Obama had won, when Mitch McConnell kind of did the exact opposite following Obama's victory and vowed to oppose him in everything. Although I
are going back to when Clinton was leaving office and they removed all the W's from the typewriter, which is, I'm not sure whether that actually happened or not, but
here's what I had a slight issue with in the aftermath. And it wasn't so much with the candidates, but with some of the supporters on both sides. On the Trump side, the people's calls to get over it, as though like some people's feelings weren't valid. You know, people haven't really been getting over these elections since Gore in 2000. Back then, you know, it was very difficult for
hanging chads, and that's what I remember.
Yeah, passed it when it came down to a Supreme Court and one Supreme Court justice, and then, you know, talk of a stolen election, comparing Bush to all sorts of Stalin, Hitler, et cetera.
And even having pictures with his face on a gun sight as a target.
Well, so, and you saw the same with Obama's face, too, posted on everything.
Yeah.
And that Republicans, including our current president-elect, continue to question Obama's birthplace and his legitimacy. And so I don't see that as certainly getting over it for him. So on that note, the whole idea of just get over it is at the very least insensitive, I think. But I thought it was kind of surreal when I saw Obama meeting with Trump in the really quickly days afterwards.
Mr. President-elect, that we now are going to want to do everything we can to help you succeed, because if you succeed, then the country succeeds.
Well, thank you very much, President Obama. This was a meeting that was going to last for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, and we were just going to get to know each other. We had never met each other. I have great respect. We discussed a lot of different situations, some wonderful and some difficulties.
Obama, who had called Trump completely unfit, and Trump, who had questioned Obama's legitimacy and called him the founder of ISIS, and there they are, you know, making nice, trying to seem friendly. It was definitely strange to watch. I don't know if you guys felt
surreal. Surreal is the word I want to say.
I thought it was strange. I guess I wanted to be a fly on the wall when Michelle was talking to Trump tonight and wondering, hey, what do you think about my speech? So I guess, like,
I could understand that, Justin.
But, like, in her defense, they're like, no, it's not. I mean, that was writers, but, like, I just kind of, I knew it was just playing nice, I guess. I don't know. It was just interesting.
All right, so now we're going to move past the immediate days of the election into some of the things that have come up since. Let's start with the idea of the protests and the riots.
Well, what bothers me is BLM, and yes, I think Black Lives Matter, definitely. I feel sympathetic towards all people. I have friends that are a multitude of races and ethnic groups, and have had Muslim doctors, and I wouldn't have a lot of interaction with. Just because of where we live, I end up, like I said, I do a lot of missionary work, or whatever you want to call it, going into prisons and basically praying that we all can get along. Yeah, I was upset about the various different protests, blocking traffic. You know, that's taking somebody else's right away. And your rights end where my rights begin, is the way I've always felt.
I'm going to stop you for a second, Dad. First to say that I don't think Black Lives Matter officially organized or sponsored any of the protests. And if we blame that group for any time someone mentions their name while engaging in wrongheaded activities, then we would have to blame the Trump Organization for anything done in his name. Neither is really fair.
It was stated that the one that blocked one of the interstates down in St. Louis was a BLM group, and that was where I got the information.
There was no, like, official.
I agree, there isn't any official.
Black Lives Matter does have an official website and did organize official gatherings during the election, but I don't think they've organized any of the protests.
Well, you said Black Lives Matter.
It was just stated that that one was, so. But I think all lives matter.
I'm going to interrupt you again for a second, Dad. And I say this knowing you to be the first to wonderfully intercede and speak positively on behalf of your ethnically diverse grandchildren when your extended family is thought otherwise. But sometimes you stick your foot in your mouth, and that all lives mantra kind of falls into that category.
Oh, great.
Let me put this in a way for you to connect to. Yes, the life of every human being is important, which is why murder has been the most foul crime since the Codes of Hammurabi.
Yeah.
But when we see or read about a number of black men and boys being shot by either police or vigilantes like George Zimmerman, it should at the very least give us pause because of the sacredness of human life.
Okay.
And right now, and we're not going to get into whether the shootings might be justified or ratios of police interactions to shootings, and whether it's small or whether the investigations need to be led by outside organizations. Although, if law and order has taught us anything, judges and district attorneys have an equally important job that is negated when the defendant is dead. All that we need to know now is that in these instances, some family is without their brother or father or son. And so when somebody says Black Lives Matter, it doesn't mean exclusively. It means also, because theirs are among the lives being lost. So saying all lives matter in response disregards that loss. Just like if you said abortion is wrong because the life of the unborn child matters, and in response somebody goes to you, well, so does the life of my tennis instructor. Even though it might be true, it's horribly insensitive.
You know, we can all agree, I think, that all lives matter, but their movement is more about that their lives matter too. And it's like you said, in rural America, and you brought up coincidentally jails, that you've been in jails. I don't know if that was a correlation to black people in jail.
No, it's just that, okay. That I'm sympathetic towards, and I basically do feel that too many blacks are unjustly stigmatized by probably on a higher percentage being sent to jail than whites or other nationalities or other persuasions. And that's why I mentioned the jail part. So I know when I go into a prison, it seems like 90% of the prisoners I see, at least in the yard and also in the group that we are dealing with, are black. So that
could be a whole other podcast.
It could. Yeah, it could be a whole other discussion.
We'll get off that for now. First, as far as the protests, I wholeheartedly support any American's right to peacefully protest, whether it be for an election or boycotting some product that supports something you don't like. I support a celebrity's right to speak out just as much as I support your right to call that celebrity misinformed. That's freedom of speech and action. But I do immediately withdraw my support when violence and vandalism arise. I don't care how good you think your cause is, the minimum wage or the Cubs winning the championship. If you're disrupting in a way, you're becoming doubly ignorant because not only are you risking arrest and injury and the injury of others, but you're also turning off everyone from supporting your cause that you might have otherwise gotten support from. Also, let me take issue with some other details of those protests, because when you look at them, most of the people that I saw were very young. And that means statistically, many of them likely didn't even vote, and that a handful of the participants may have been more anarchists than people displeased with the outcome of the election. Secondly, the young also disproportionately voted for third-party candidates when they did vote, so the percentage of disenfranchised Democrats may have only made up a small fraction of the protesters. And my last thought on those protests is, why? Because most of them have died down at this point, but what was the intended goal? Was it to change the results, to change people's minds for the next election? Because if that was so, why were they protesting in heavily Democratic places like Portland and Philadelphia and here in New York City? I get that people will turn out in bigger numbers here, but so? Like, here in New York, they're protesting in Union Square, which to me seems kind of purposeless. Like, go to Staten Island or Western Long Island in the places where Trump won. I don't want to compare.
He only won one borough of the five, didn't he?
Yeah, only Staten Island.
That's what I heard anyway.
But Staten Island is regularly Republican leaning, as is
Oh, okay.
as is Long Island, as you get further out on Long Island.
Okay. Yeah, that's yeah. Okay.
Here's what I would say. If you look at previous marches, and again, I don't like comparing this, but if you look at the march in Selma against segregation, those protesters, they made themselves seen to the people who opposed them. And they were opposed harshly. They were righteous in the face of the violence. And then when the rest of America...
Like Gandhi, when he protested.
Yeah. Like when they were bloody on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, people throughout the rest of the country saw that. And even though the people there in Selma were against them, everybody else in the country was moved to action and support. And now on the news, and maybe this is more of a knock on cable news, and again, that's a different podcast, you see only the moments of the rioting, even when most of the protests were peaceful. So those images make it so easy for people who aren't in those democratic cities to completely disregard the protests. Although
it's very much like the Haymarket riots.
Well, these protests are certainly far less violent than the Haymarket riots, but I would agree that they're similar in the sense that it turns people off from the very labor movement you're trying to advocate.
Although I've heard that question interestingly brought, what is the right way to protest? You mentioned blocking traffic as being inappropriate. And, you know, the president-elect mentioned flag burning and that, you know, maybe people who do that should have their citizenship revoked. But then people were shouting about a man who's not setting a flag on fire, but who's simply kneeling during the anthem. You know, maybe you can't block traffic, but even if all you do is voice your opinion loudly online, still even there.
Like how are you supposed to protest?
Yeah, even online, people are getting threatened with rape and murder for voicing their opinions against, you know.
It's like, if you don't agree with what I agree with, then go away, get out of my country, or
yes.
You're, like, if you kneel, it's like you can't silently protest, you can't publicly protest, then how are we supposed to protest? So I agree with you mostly, Sean, as far as like the protest. Like, I don't think it should turn into riots or violence or disrupting people's day, or to the point that like people can't get to their job or the property's getting destroyed. You know, people can protest anything they want. And then again, it's just like whether you agree with the flag being burned. And obviously, I don't agree with it, but it's freedom of speech. And once you start telling people what kind of freedom of speech they can and can't do, you're walking on a slippery slope. And so
agreed.
Yeah. So you might not agree with somebody burning the flag, at the same time, it is freedom of speech. And then if you tell somebody they can't burn a flag and make it illegal, well, then now a lot of that opens like a Pandora's box to me. So as far as protests are concerned, but then there's all these other issues from, you know, like we talked about, you know, the alt-right or the white supremacists celebrate.
As we discuss freedom of speech, it's important to bring this up. And you mentioned it, I remember as a kid in Chicago, and then as a college student in Kentucky. In Chicago, it was the neo-Nazis, and then in college in Kentucky, it was the Ku Klux Klan, and they would have their marches. And the point being is, as wretched and terrible as these groups may be, they also have freedom of speech rights. And you also have the right to speak out against them, but because of this issue, and I know it's something you're sensitive to, Dad, but, and maybe it doesn't reflect the majority of Trump supporters, in the same way that the protests don't necessarily represent most Clinton supporters, but whether you call it the alt-right or white supremacy, there's certainly been a vocal group of Trumpeters who align themselves with anti-Semitic and anti-immigrant sentiment. Just a couple of facts post-election, the Southern Poverty Law Center documented about 900 hate incidents in the 10 days after the election. And in it, over 300 of those, Trump was directly referenced. And these have included vandalism.
Corresponding with that, you have California, which said it's okay for illegal aliens to vote in the election, which in reality is not. But
I don't believe they.
Well, it was put out, and it
Trump tweeted
was
about
said
it,
that
about
the governor was authorizing it. So
that's not wholly accurate. What happened was California passed two unconnected laws. One allows undocumented immigrants to get licenses, and another automatically enrolls citizens to vote. But the license don't allow you to even board a plane, let alone register to vote. The two things are completely unconnected.
But as I was saying, there have been vandalism to mosques and synagogues, attack on Muslim women in headscarves. There were incidents where Hispanic students were bullied while in school by teachers and other students.
I'm terrified. I don't feel comfortable in it.
These Maple Grove senior high school students worry after finding graffiti in a school bathroom stall.
Get out of my country. Get out.
This is
not
about you. I'm a U.S. citizen too.
Well, whatever. No.
And here in New York City, tour guides for the Tenement Museum have suddenly encountered a great deal of anti-immigrant hostility during their tours. I mean, ultimately, this whole idea of anti-immigrant sentiment isn't anything new, because first America opposed German immigration, then the Irish and the Catholics, the Italians, the Chinese, and it wasn't that long ago that the Japanese were interned here in America. There's all this animosity by groups that praise and want to align themselves with Trump. So should we see meaning in that?
I mean, we've seen things here where we live in Rochester, which I consider a more liberal area. So I couldn't imagine. And then I have friends still living in the South. And the day after, he's a university professor in Arkansas, and college educated students of his that are, I believe were in a master's program. So we're talking well educated students got attacked, told back, called the N-word, go back to where you came from. They were just walking to go get breakfast, you know. So Trump was referenced in that as well. So it's just whether these, and it could be the same thing as the protests, you know, whether they're protesting against Trump's win. I mean, these people may not have ever voted for Trump. You know, it could be both. They could have, we don't know, obviously, but the fact that they're using his win as a way to create more hate, I definitely feel it's related.
it's related.
I don't think I feel like it's not getting enough attention. And I don't feel like, I know Trump did say, which is good on 60 Minutes, that, hey, you know, stop it.
They're harassing Latinos, Muslims.
I am so saddened to hear that. And I say, stop it. If it helps, I will say this, and I'll say it right to the camera, stop it.
But nothing else has been touched on about it. And I guess maybe it's just me personally that I feel like maybe there is something, maybe I'm not paying attention because of my busy schedule. I just feel like we're really going, I don't know. That's what concerns me, since I have biracial children.
Justin, can I ask you something?
No, go ahead.
Yeah. How do you feel about Ben Carson being asked to be a part of his cabinet?
I have no problem with him being a part of a cabinet. I have a problem with him being a part of where he's going to be a cabinet. The fact that he doesn't agree in equal housing and he's going to be a part of, you know,
okay,
housing.
I just thought I'd ask.
I have no problem with any person that's qualified. I think it's funny that he turned down a position because he said he wasn't qualified, but yet he was running for president. And then he takes a position that he has no experience in. And
now, I'm married to an immigrant, but as a straight white man, I have little direct experience with prejudice. But for me, one thing I said to you, Justin, is I think it might be easier to fight this open hostility than more subtle racism. I mean,
who they are.
Yeah, it's much easier to see that than it is to see the guy who throws away the resumes of black guys.
In fact, it's motivated me to get in a security system for our house, which I probably wouldn't have normally done. So,
I mean, I've seen videos online of people screaming racial epithets at minority store employees. And then this obviously horrible customer is shouting that they voted for Trump and that person will soon have to leave the country. But again, as you said, Trump eventually spoke against David Duke in an interview. He also said on 60 Minutes that if anybody's spreading hate in his name, to just stop it. And on the same note, a couple of the incidents have been shown to be false. For example, one Muslim woman who said she was attacked and her headscarf was pulled, she later recanted and said it wasn't true. There were swastikas painted on a synagogue, but it turns out they were spray painted there by Jewish students from Northwestern who were anti-Trump, but just wanted to, you know, fuel the anti-Trump fervor.
Oh, great. Up in Chicago.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And to be fair, there have been anti-Trump incidents as well. And though they haven't been seemingly as frequent, some of them have been at least as violent.
This is bad.
There were incidents in Maryland and Chicago of Trump supporters being beaten viciously by anti-Trump protesters, not necessarily protesters, groups, mostly teenagers in those cases.
Yeah, I mean, to touch on what you mentioned earlier, like you mentioned it, you talked about the one side, but you didn't touch the other about, you know, saying that you don't matter, you know, when people are getting upset. I think it's the same thing goes, just because you voted for Trump doesn't mean necessarily you hate women and you're a racist and everything else. I just feel that it was like, you know, at the end of the day, you cared more about policies and not maybe people's feelings and what the altercations and the things that might have occurred afterwards. So I think it goes both ways. It's just because you voted for this certain person, you can't. I think what's going on is we're fitting everybody into one solid box, and which is creating even more and more division on both sides, which for me, creating more and more division, like, this is just creating even more separation to the point of like a breaking point, like that things are definitely will not get better.
Well, I hope this podcast is a good example of how people don't have to stay so divided and they can have these discussions and not feel separate from each other when they speak to each other respectfully and when it comes to their genuine humanity. So the next topic we were going to go over was the recount. So without diving too deep into the intricacies and whole purpose of the Electoral College, we'll save that for another show. What do you guys think about the efforts of Jill Stein to begin recounts in a few states?
Dad, if you want to go ahead.
It seems like Shakespeare said, much to do about nothing.
I could agree with you on that. Yeah, I don't see anything coming of it. I don't think anything could or would. Republicans in general, and just more conservative Republicans, when voter turnout is lower, such was the nature of how Ted Cruz initially won his seat in Texas, where the voter turnout for the whole state, because dates got shifted and changed to a strange, I think it was Tuesday in the middle of a super hot summer day in July, where the whole voter turnout for the state of Texas was less than the voter turnout for the mayor's race in the city of Chicago.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, so there was super low turnout and Ted Cruz ended up beating a less conservative Republican who had previously held the seat when Ted Cruz first got his seat. So in that sense, conservatives tend to win when the voter turnout is lower, whereas Democrats tend to win when, or even more liberal Democrats tend to win when the voter turnout is higher. So, you know, they lean towards more, I guess, increased voter turnout, which is why the idea of the illegal voters in California, I think, happened because Jerry Brown, the governor, had passed a law to make it easier to vote. Voters,
you could rest of the day you came in.
Well, there was that.
One of them was that.
Day of registration. Yeah. There was also automatic registration.
Even Illinois that allow illegals to have license, which I think is ridiculous. They say it's for safety, but I disagree with that.
Wait, I mean, when you say the word illegal, I mean, what
they
do you
aren't
mean
legally.
Illegal?
Is the way I'm.
Then how can they get driver's
license?
That's true, Justin, that undocumented immigrants in California are able to get a driver's license.
In Illinois, also.
Yeah, in some states.
And Rahm Emanuel has already said that he won't help Trump ferret out illegals in Chicago.
I just don't want to understand what everyone's fear of illegals are, I guess.
Well, the term illegals is one that some people...
Well, of immigrants that came from other countries, I don't understand what everyone's fear of all the people that are... I just don't understand it. I would love for Minnesota to explain what are they so scared of.
Well, I'm thinking Duckworth here in Illinois said we should have 200,000 Syrians come in. And they said they couldn't vet the ones that were coming in now, let alone instead of 20,000 coming in, having 200,000 come in.
Again, what's the fear?
We're not getting into illegal immigration because the issue we were discussing.
That's
so we're
going
to get to that another day. So let's look at post-election Trump. So when he first, you know, got his phone back afterwards, he said, we're going to prove to have a great time in the lives of all Americans. We're going to unite with each other. We're going to win and win big and continue winning. So there was this idea of unification on his part immediately after his victory, but that didn't seem to continue long. When he mentioned his many enemies, he seems to make enemies now, more recently, of the cast of Hamilton, of Saturday Night Live, his settlement of the Trump University suit for $25 million, which he said is not a big issue. In the midst of these, can we trust post-election Trump to be a unifier, or is it better that he draw these lines?
I think he will try to do what he thinks is best for the United States. And
I think there's going to have to be some cleaning of the house first before he can do anything that he really wants to set his sights upon.
Do you see him cleaning?
I think he'll have to get support from his own party before he can actually get anything done.
Do you see him as courting the support of his party, or more? He was at least during the campaign one to buck the party. A big deal. They ended up coming back to him even after he bucked them. So is he going to be?
I think he will court the party in a sense, but he will also put forth some things that the party probably will not agree on.
Well, because part of what drove his popularity was his persona of being this outsider to all of the system's corruption, while still being enough of an insider to understand how that corruption worked and to be involved in it with his company as a CEO. But there was that clarion call to, you know, drain the swamp that he continues to chant and that, you know, was big during the campaign. But now that he's the president-elect, he's in a different position.
Like they say, no man's an island, so he's going to have some support from various areas to get anything done in there.
I don't know if he'll necessarily do what's best. I have no idea. I feel like he's doing what's best for him, and I feel like Pence is kind of taking the reins, and it almost seems like Pence is more in control. And just my, like, from the people that are appointing, and it seems like a lot of people he's appointing are almost contradictory to the roles that they're in, so...
You've got an education secretary who opposes, you know, public education.
Yeah, the more days progress, trying to look at the positive.
Head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, who's currently in a lawsuit with the EPA. Yeah.
Being a Christian, it's like I try to look at the positive, and I'm trying to... Yeah, well, and the fact that he'll like, diss our 15...
Intelligence agencies?
Intelligent agency, but like support, you know, Russia over them when now this is the first time where they've actually been working together, you know, where they're actually like cohesively working together. So it just amazes me. You know, if Obama, for example, were to like diss our intelligence agency, I feel like everyone would call him unpatriotic. But it's okay for Trump to do it. So I don't know. I want to be optimistic. I'm just kind of like, wait and see, you know, maybe he'll be the, you know, even though it's an ultra, one of the most conservative cabinets there's be, maybe he'll be that balancing act for it all. And that's what I'm hopeful for. But as far as what I see, I don't really see that. So,
I mean, Mike Pence has been actively engaged. He was the one receiving the security briefings pretty much daily, where even up till now, Trump has only attended, you know, a sparse number. And, you know, he said he didn't need it as much, you know, because he was smart enough already. And challenging the intelligence agencies definitely seemed like something new that I hadn't seen before.
You are getting the presidential daily brief.
Yes, only once a week.
Well, I get it when I need it. I don't have to be told, you know, I'm like a smart person. I don't have to be told the same thing and the same words every single day for the next 8 years.
Well, I know Pence has gone to more of the security briefings and everything, and I'm glad to see that one of the two of them is.
what about his
challenge? With all of the job going on?
The intelligence agencies, specifically the CIA.
Well, from some of the things and everything, it seems like the FBI and the CIA were trying to cover up some things. And I'm not sure what. You don't know whether you're getting fake stories or real stories. And out here kind of in the country, you don't have usually as many opportunities for news to give a broader view. But even with that, NBC and ABC and CBS, I'm not always sure that they get the whole story and get it right.
There's a lot about Trump that reminds me of Nixon, and I don't necessarily mean that in a pejorative way. Yes, when we think of Nixon, we
negative way. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But in the sense that he's tried to be that law and order candidate.
As far as this problem of law and order is concerned, I am for law and order.
He said that as president, you know, the law doesn't apply to him in the same exact way.
Trump on Wednesday told the New York Times that under the law, the president can't have a conflict of interest.
Or when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
And some of his dealings, especially with international matters, Well, this Nixon madman theory was what I was getting at. You know how Nixon's international theory of basically if he was irrational and volatile enough, he would put the adversaries on edge and they wouldn't want to mess with us? Maybe this is what Trump is
doing. Much like Reagan did, because they knew they didn't dare piss him off, or there would be retaliation.
I'll say this for Reagan. There was a time when Reagan made an off-the-cuff joke on the radio when he was just practicing, and he made an off-the-cuff joke about bombing Russia, and Russia went into like DEFCON 4 and in the midst of just a joke, quickly learned that even those little jokes can be serious issues on an international stage. We learned that even those small-scale things can make a big difference.
Yes, again.
We'll have to see whether Trump is wary enough of that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I had thought gives me the greatest pause about Trump are the conflicts of interest. Prior to the election, you know, it was fairly well known that he has interest in properties all over the world. And according to him, only the crooked media that's making this a big deal, and that the law is on his side, and the president, by the very nature of being president, can't have a conflict of interest. And that goes to that Nixonian idea. But there are bipartisan groups, including George W. Bush's top ethics lawyer, that have raised some red flags about his conflicts of interest. There was his call with Taiwan, exploring expansion, that he has laws in there, having the Secret Service pay for housing in Trump Tower and on Trump jets in New York City for his security. He's got labor disputes in Vegas. Now Ivanka was sitting in with talks to Argentina. She was sitting in with Japanese leaders. There were the major issues with him with President Duterte, who's got his own controversy swirling in the Philippines, where they named a new trade envoy to the United States, which was Jose Antonio, who's the man who's building Trump Tower in Manila. Properties in Georgia, Paul Manafort, Secretary of State, definitely got ties to Russia. And again, people argue that could be a net positive, but you know, it's also issues of conflict of interest too. Do those give you pause?
I think they could be, but I think the media is blowing things up more than what, you know, maybe if they worried as much about previous presidents as they're worried about Trump, we might not be in some of the situations we're in now.
I think part of that, though, is that Trump's conflicts are fairly unprecedented. I recall Jimmy Carter getting a great deal of scrutiny about his peanut business in relationship to his brother, and he made sure he remained completely above board, divesting of all those interests. And Trump has said he's going to have meetings about divesting, but he has yet to do anything about it. It at least gives me pause, I have to say, and it is probably the most worrisome thing on my mind about his role.
I mean, you guys pretty much said everything. It's just like, you know, you see like with like his hotel in D.C., you guys all know that like people are switching contracts, or they had contracts with previous hotels over to that hotel. It's like foreign diplomats and things like that. So it's already showing favor towards like properties of his. So, I mean, I was reading some story, I don't remember all the details of it, where he's got twin towers being built in, what is that, Turkey?
Yeah.
The person that was
Erdogan.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't like the builder of that the builder of that get arrested recently? So it's just like, yeah, it being a conflict of interest, because like while obviously they could pay favors, they could also do the vice versa and make threats against his family, against his business, which could also put America in harm's way. It's a concern. Like at the grand scheme of things, I just hope that he puts America first and not business interests and his first. So
people, in the abstract sense, like the idea of a businessman as president. But if a businessman is going to be president, does he, when he becomes president, have to divest himself of all those businesses?
Put him in a blind trust, maybe.
Yeah, that would be good. Although, if his children are running it,
how could you put that many things in a blind trust?
The inauguration is coming up soon, so I guess we'll have to wait and see what we see when it happens and when it all comes to pass. Thank you guys for joining me again tonight.
Yep. God bless you both.
You too. Love you, Dad.
Love you, son.
So let's end with what Abraham Lincoln said. The ballot is stronger than the bullet. And we certainly see that people's vote is impactful. and it definitely has power. Imelda Marcos also said, win or lose, all the pain aside, we go shopping after the election. I like that idea.
And buy shoes.
Sure. Well, if you're Imelda Marcos, definitely. For me, probably more of a video games or a new iPhone.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, guys, for joining. And I'll talk to you guys.
God bless you, folks. See y'all.
Yep.
Take it easy. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Different Roads, Same Castle was created, hosted, and edited by Sean Arnold, who is joined by Donald and Justin Arnold. In the next episode, we'll explore the role of the media in politics and the rise of fake news.
The restaurant's basement is said to be the center of a child sex slave ring that's run by Hillary Clinton and her campaign manager, but none of this is true. In fact, the restaurant here reportedly doesn't even have a basement.
DC's paper of record published a bogus story last week saying Russia hacked the U.S. electrical grid. The story was totally discredited, but not before it spread across the globe.
You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Same Castle. Let us know what you think, what you liked, what we can do better, and what you want to hear us discuss. Thank you for listening.